today on 4CA. John McKenzie, 1300 872911.
Look, I'm going to get to the latest developments in this Russia-Ukraine conflict in a moment, but there is a very serious, in my view anyway, security matter much closer to our borders. I'll just read it from page one of the Australian today. It's under the heading Solomon's China Military Pact. I think a lot of people saw this coming some months ago. Well, there it is, a draft security cooperation agreement between China and the Solomon Islands would allow Chinese military forces to be deployed in the Pacific Island nation and could pave the way for the establishment of a People's Liberation Army base. The concern here is, I mean, Honiara would be, what, 2,000 kilometres from here. There used to be a direct air link at one stage between Cairns and Honiara. So this really is a critically important matter. It goes on to say the framework agreement between the two governments, which was leaked online on yesterday, would enable the Solomon Islands government to, quote, request China to send police. This is so duplicitous of this Solomon Islands government, it's beyond description. Could request China to send police, armed police, military personnel and other law enforcement and armed forces to the Solomon Islands. It's a dreadful, dreadful business, this, and really, I'm sure, of great concern to our military advisors and planners. I've just put a call through to Glenn Kolomeitz. Now, Glenn is a military lawyer and defence academic, so he's just the gentleman we need on the show to discuss this matter. Hello, Glenn.
Good morning, John.
This is genuinely concerning, isn't it?
It is, mate. I'm always a little bit sceptical, though, of bilateral treaties in draft. Is this a first draft China, you know, Beijing wish list, or is it a late draft where Honiara and Beijing are coming to some sort of agreement? So I think a little bit of scepticism is healthy, but nonetheless, the very existence of this dialogue between Honiara and Beijing is of concern, yes.
Well, it's interesting. Solomon Islands is keen to have two bob each way. I mean, the fact of the matter is, oh, yes, we'll embrace all assistance can come when we have some sort of disruption here on our islands, and Australia will come to our assistance. As soon as that came back under control, even though the Australian contingent, I understand, is still there, off to Beijing to do a deal with them. And, of course, Beijing would love to get some sort of presence there so ultimately they can establish some sort of base.
Absolutely right, mate. And you might recall the Ramsey mission, the Australian-New Zealand-led Ramsey mission, which stabilised the Solomons some years back now. There was no Chinese footprint there then. They weren't happy to do the heavy lifting then. It was all Australia and New Zealand troops in there and police and AFP doing the hard yards. So, mate, you raise a very good point. Why now? And I think it's pretty obvious why now, that strategic footprint, as you say, 2,000 kilometres to our north-northeast.
Yes. Don't go away. I've got to take you to Ukraine. Now, I saw these figures in The Australian this morning, and at first when you see them, it's heartening. But still, there's this dreadful suffering being endured by the people of Ukraine. Let me read this, though. It's under the heading, Russians count the cost of bloody invasion. NATO estimates Russia has lost as much as one-fifth of its combat forces in a month of fighting in Ukraine, as the Western Military Alliance met in Brussels to discuss further support to Kyiv to repel the Russian invasion. Now, it says between 7,000 and 15,000 Russian soldiers have been killed in Ukraine. Up to 40,000 Russian troops in total have been killed, wounded, taken prisoner, or are missing. 40,000 Russian troops, said a senior military official from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Russia may also have lost 10% of its equipment, impairing Moscow's ability to maintain its pace of operations. Are you convinced by these figures, Glenn, or are they a bit too optimistic?
Well, I am convinced. I think what we're seeing in the Western media and the fact that Russia's denying it is pretty persuasive, I have to say. But the whole mission, as we've discussed previously, it was very badly thought out and badly executed. The fact that they have generals up on the front lines, essentially, tells me that their forces are not being led adequately at the tactical level, that it was chaotic from day one, poorly planned and executed. And look, it doesn't surprise me, these sorts of casualties in that current environment in the Ukraine.
Now, this sentence is across page one of the Australian. Western military forces will be bolstered along the borders with Ukraine as NATO overhauls its defences to combat any potential threat of a Russian invasion of Allied territory. It's sort of edging a little bit closer to a bigger confrontation than we're seeing at the moment, and possibly including, to some extent, NATO forces.
Mate, you're right in one regard. This really turns Putin's plans on its head. Putin hoped to weaken NATO by this operation, and in fact, he strengthened NATO. Four division strength battle groups around the eastern periphery of NATO. That's a pretty powerful message by NATO, and it also does show, sends a message to Putin that some of these former Soviet states or satellite states don't really want to come back into his orbit, and NATO is helping them stay out of his orbit. So, you know, it's powerful stuff, and it could be an indicia to further conflict, but at the moment I think we just simply sit on that. We don't get too over the top about that right now, but it's a good sign by NATO. It says to Putin, you failed. We're united, and the West is united, yes. And you're not going to win this.
Yes. Look, this one too, I mean, I can understand the plight of our Prime Minister saying, hang on a minute, I don't want to sit at a table of 20 with that vile creep just up the other end of the table there. Vladimir Putin is apparently making plans to attend the G20 Leaders Summit in Bali in November. Surely not.
Look, it's insane, isn't it? The Council of Europe removed Russia recently, rightly so. So they're already starting to isolate Russia, and Russia must be worried about that. They can't be removed from the Security Council, so they're embedded there. But I think the more they're isolated from these international institutions, the more Russia will suffer, and economically and geopolitically, and the more Putin will suffer. So he's trying to cling on to these international institution links, and the G20 being one of them, desperately, I would argue.
Just one final point. The last 24, 48 hours, how have the Ukrainians been holding out against the Russian forces?
Mate, there's been, as you've probably heard, there's been some advances for regaining territory around Kyiv. The reason there, the Ukrainians have been very clever. They've drawn the Russians away past the limits of their lines of supply, given them a kicking, and then driven them back to regain territory. So that's positive around Kyiv, being a long way from the Russian limit of supply. But the other areas closer to Russian supply lines, like Mariupol, are still in pretty dire straits. So, you know, Ukrainian winds around the capital aren't being reflected necessarily in the closer areas closer to Russian territory.
Yeah. Appreciate this update. Thank you, Glenn.
Thanks, John.
Cheers, mate. That's Glenn Kolomitz. He's the military lawyer and defence academic.